Hello and welcome. I'm Patrick, your host for this presentation in the Inland Mariners audio series. In this interview, I'm talking with John Woodward, former Great Lakes sailor. How did you end up getting... Did your family sail, John?
Well, my family never did. They were actually from, you know, from farmers' country and all that stuff, so...
Where did you grow up, John?
Northeast Ohio, in between Conne and Ashtabula.
Okay, so you were familiar with the lake boats then at that time, right?
A little bit there. I mean, we saw them go by. We had a lot of other things doing.
Was your family a sailing family at all?
No, not at all. I'm the only one as far as I know. I had an uncle in the Navy in World War II, but that's about the only one I know. So.
How did you end up getting into sailing then?
Well, I was not doing much, you know, just working at a job. I was trying to find some good work. Well, my friend Donovan come up and he goes, "Are you doing anything today?" And I said, "No, well, let's go to Cleveland and get your Seaman's card." So we went up there, and I guess we had to go see Greenlee, I believe it was. The union president at the time got a letter from him. And then we went to Kresge's in Cleveland. I got my photo and then back to the Coast Guard and filled out a bunch of forms. Yeah, I believe I had the card back the same day. I can't remember, but if it was, it was very close. And all we had to do in security-wise is to fill out this form, and then I had one question: "Are you a member of one of these organizations?" In the back, I flipped it over, 3 pages long, 3 columns in small print, flipped it back to the front and said no.
How did you come to know Don Donovan?
Well, we went to school together. I kind of met him when we were about 12. So, and we just started hanging out together.
Was he sailing at the time?
Yes, he was on the... I remember going down and visiting him on the James A. Farrell in Central Furnace in Cleveland back in the early 70s. And I also had a friend across the street. Well, I didn't know he had gone sailing till a few years later. He had mentioned it. So,
where were you living at the time?
In North Kingsville, in between Conne and Ashtabula.
Okay.
Along Lake Erie. What I found out later, I guess my mother knew that Donovan sailed and had asked his mother to ask him to see if I could get out. So. That was a background on that.
So your mother kind of went around your back then. What did you think of that?
I didn't mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, you call that an end run, I guess, or blindsided? I don't know.
So what did your father think when you went to sail?
My dad had passed away in 71.
What year did you go then to get your seaman card?
73.
Okay. How old were you at the time?
Let me see. About 20.
How did that process work?
Well, we had to get a letter of recommendation, which I got from the union president, which I think was Greenlee at the time, as I mentioned. Then we went down the Coast Guard and said we'd like to apply for a seaman's card. So that's what I did.
Okay. So what happened after that then? Did you ship out right away or did you?
I was, of course, one of them goofy ones that went down in the boat to look and say, "Have any openings?" You know, then back then you could get on the boats. But I was going to college and not doing too good. Well, I got a call to go on to Roger Blau in July.
July of 73.
Yeah, I went on it for about 17 days.
Tell me what you remember about catching that ship for the first time.
I caught it in Conneaut. So then, you know, I had 17 days. We went to Gary and Conneaut and stuff. So I might have gotten off in Gary when I came home. But
do you remember getting on the boat and the first trip, all of that?
I was busy being a porter and stuff, so I kind of eat, sleep, and work. I wasn't out on deck much, so all I remember was I walked up to the pile house to get my discharge, and that was the only time I went forward.
So you went on the blow for a couple weeks?
Yeah. I went home for a few days, and then I went on the Joshua A. Hatfield as a deckhand. I think that might have been in September or something, because we were only on there a couple months. We laid her up in November. And I went on the William A. Irvin in November or something like that, or maybe a little bit earlier. I'm not sure. And laid her up in Lorain in this middle of December.
So going out on deck was a lot different than being a porter. What was a typical day like when you first started? What were your hours? And
well, they worked us an 8-hour day. You know, of course, we had to get up, for the locks and making ports and stuff. You know, just, opening and closing. Of course, the Hatfield was an 18-hatch tarp job, so I was on there. Maybe it was September. I don't know, September or October. I'm not sure, but so I got the experience of putting on the tarps and battens and strong backs and all that. So
can you describe how that process worked?
I know we had a cable. We had a midship winch, the cable, and then there was goosenecks on the ends of each hatch because they were telescopic, and we would put a block on there and put the cables through that, and it was like a Y shape with hooks, and we would put them on the knobs for the open the hatches. So we pull them open, and we had to go down the other side of the deck and do the same thing. And then when we closed them, we did the same pattern, but we ran the cables across and pulled them shut and tend them. Then we put the tarps on, and we had to put the strong backs on. I think there's like two on each half of the hatches. And we folded the corners on a certain way on the tarps. And then we put these, I think they're about 1 by 2 by 8 feet or so battens, we call them. And we fit them behind the clamps, which was like a C, and you had to put them up on top of the hatch, and then you had a big wing nut that we tightened, and then we had to make sure there was a wing nut on each end of the strong backs to hold them down.
And these are canvas tarps, John?
Yes, they are.
That must be really heavy stuff then to move.
Oh, yeah. Story a guy told me this one day, kind of was that if you've been on the old ones, they had like the upper and lower dunnage rooms, and then they had like the blind tank with stairways. They're probably about 3 flights. Well, that's where they kept the tarps. So we had to kind of manhandle them all the way up to get them out on deck. Well, one of the deckhands was taught, he see those I-beams along the passageways on the overhead? And I said, yeah. He said, there used to be a hoist that slid along there, and they kept the tarps in the dunnage room, and they would lower balls down and hook them onto the tarps and pull them up that way, and then run them out to the outboard side there to go outside and drop them on the deck. But a mate thought that was too easy and had him stop it. That was his story.
Nice guy. So you got to go up 3 flights of stairs with those?
Yeah. Or whatever, that'd be ladder ways, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm sorry. Ladders.
Pardon my ear.
No. It's better to get the terminology correct. What would one of those weigh?
Oh, a couple 100 pounds or better. They were hard to manhandle. Plus the fact that sometimes you had to hang them up and dry them out. At least I wasn't on there when it got winter time, so.
Well, that's what I was going to say. In the winter, those must have been frozen and...
Oh, yeah.
So the Hatfield, that's a pretty old ship.
Yeah, 1913, I think, somewhere around there.
And where were your crew quarters on the Hatfield?
Forward end, port passageway, first room on the starboard side of that. In fact, I was just discussing that with somebody that sailed on that. So I actually have pictures of me sitting in that room.
How many crew were on the ship the size of the Hatfield?
I don't remember. I know there was at least 30, but I didn't know, so.
So were you glad to be out of the kitchen and out of the galley?
Yeah, I like being outside, so.
And what was their run?
Chicago, Duluth to Chicago, a lot of times, so. I can't remember if they went to Lorraine. I know they went to Chicago, the steel mill there, so, which is all gone now, so.
What steel mill was that? I've never been to the mills there in Chicago. They were gone before I was around.
I think it was a Southworks or something. I'm not sure exactly.
And who owned that?
Oh, yeah, I see steel.
So what was it like your first trip up the, that's the Calumet, isn't it?
I think it wasn't too bad. I don't remember too much because I was busy opening, closing, have to go on the dock and things. But I do remember one incident we had there. They were using clamshells to unload us. One of the cables broke and it fell down on deck in between the hatches with no problem. Well, these, you know, we were standing out of the way to watch them, and they went and rigged a cable up under to make it like a sling. And me, even as dumb as I was, but then looked at that and I said, that isn't going to hold. They got it about 25 feet up in the air and it let go. This time it fell on the combing, made a big wave out of that, and put four or five hatch leaves in the cargo hold.
So who had to go fish those out?
Yeah, we got them out, but the fun part was they wanted us out of the way and on the other side of the slip. Well, they didn't have a bow thruster and stuff like that back then, so we had to take several lengths of heaving line, and we walked it. Yeah, we kept it on the boat, but we walked it all the way around the slip to clear to the other side. It was probably about three or four boat widths across, and we even had to go up on a Canadian freighter to carry it from one end to the other and go back down on the dock. And then we had everybody and his brother down there, and we had to pull those cables all the way across that slip. I know we had about eight guys anyways. We had as many as we could get down there, and we had to pull them all the way across that slip and tie it up so they could pull the boat over with the winches.
And then you had to go finish unloading, right?
Maybe we emptied it out and then took her across. I'm not sure, but anyway, we got her across, and they had to straighten up the combings and stuff, so.
Then you went to the William Irvin.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit different of a ship, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to tell you how I went on the Hatfield. Another interesting story. I flew to Chicago and got there, and it was after dark. They were supposed to be tied up at 4:30. Well, due to wind and everything, they anchored out. And by that time, it got dark, and the guard says, don't dare go up the street. The cab drivers call it quits for at dusk around there. So I ended up sleeping on some of those industrial floor mats on top of a bench down in the locker room.
So South Chicago wasn't a real safe area then?
No, and it's, I don't know if it still is or not. But you probably don't have time to go up. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, then the Irvin, I transferred all my gear from the Hatfield to the Irvin. Then later, you know, I think it might have been September or so. You know, we laid her up in Lorraine.
Who would determine what ship you were going to be on that would move you from the Hatfield to the Irvin? How did that happen?
That was the office and stuff, because that was just like a temporary, so they sent us wherever we were needed. But they might have had a list, or you come back, but you go at the top of the list or the bottom of the list. I don't know. I was young. I didn't know all that much back then. So.
Sure. So you were working through the Union Hall or for U.S. Steel at this point?
For U.S. Steel, Local 5000 didn't have a Union Hall.
Okay. The William Irvin, that was a much different ship than the Hatfield. It had the patent hatches, the one-piece hatches, and
yeah, well, museum up here, so.
Right, I've seen it. I've been on it. What was it like being on a ship that carried passengers and guests? Was that must have been a new experience.
Well, I was went on after that was over, so.
So how was that for a ship to work on?
It was pretty good and stuff. We kind of had to, you know, do all the usual painting and scraping and all that. And of course, it had two telescoping hatches in front of the guest galley there and across the deck. And it had electric winches and stuff, so, but I was always down on the dock pulling cables and things like that.
So what was a typical day like? Walk me through a typical day for when you would come into port and tie up and unload or load. How did that all work?
They had us, like when we were in the Lorraine, it had that curved dock. I don't know if you've been there or not. And stuff. So we would get up and we'd go out and get all the cables ready, set the heaving lines out, you know, unclamp and open up the hatches. There had to be, if I believe, we had to have one guy on each end of the operate hooks plus the bosun running the crane and take them all off. And then when we got in, they lowered us down on the dock on the landing chair, and we tied her up, put the cables out and stuff, but then we had snub wire that they had to bring up off the dock and then bring it around one side of the front bit and onto the one in the back and then shift up into it. And then to put the steering cable up, we had to go up a stairway and over with a long heaving line and pull straight across in the air, hook it into a bollard that was in the side of the cliff. So, and then we would, if they needed us to shift, they would call us out. And we usually had time to go uptown and stuff, because we were probably in there 12 to 24 hours, depending. Those rigs were very slow, and they usually only had maybe two of them working out of three.
And this is in Lorraine?
Yeah. This is up the river, up by this U.S. Steel plant. I don't know, an hour or so, I can't remember exactly. It was a ways up.
So you laid the boat up in Lorraine, and then what was layup time now? This is, you never sailed into January in those days, right?
Yeah, usually by the 20th of December.
So this was all your first year?
Yeah.
What did you think after you got done? Were you going, I've had enough of this for the lifetime, or?
Actually, I went home, and I put in for another boat the next year, and I think it was a Stanley asked for it, you know, just did the winter out, started to collect unemployment, but then they said you had to work for, you know, look for work and all that, and dummy me, I should have just marked it down and got the unemployment, but I ended up getting a job for a little bit, so.
Hadn't learned to work the system yet.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, and then of course, and then comes Donovan, and I was working at this one factory, and he goes, you want to go to Florida? And yeah, next day I walked in, said I quit, and we went to Florida.
So you put in the fall, you put in for a ship? Could you actually do that?
Yeah, that's what they do. Well, they still do it.
Why did you pick the ship that you did then?
I don't know. I just, you know, I heard about it. I said, well, I'm going to go. I'd like to go on a Stanley, so that's what I did. So, yeah, it was one of the maritime boats.
So where did you catch that at the start of the year?
G&W Shipyard, June 24th, and I couldn't find the shipyard anywhere, and I had a friend that was doing hot tar roofing, and I said, but you know where it's at? The Robert C. Stanley is supposed to be in G&W Shipyard somewhere. And, oh, I've been working on a terminal tower all summer staring at that thing. But he knew where to go, so.
So this was in Cleveland then?
Yeah.
I don't know where that shipyard is in Cleveland. Where was it?
It was up the riverway. I don't know if it's still there or not. You know, this is back in the 70s. A lot of, you know, they've cleaned up the flats a lot since then. And
what was your first impression of the Stanley then? This is the one you wanted to get on?
Yeah, it was pretty good. You know, good crew and stuff. And we did a lot of, you know, while we were hauling red ore, we went mostly from to Lorraine or Conne. Yeah, we did a lot of Conneaut trips. So
what was Red Oar like? That was kind of at the end of its era, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty close. It was heavy and stuff and hard to shovel and to stain and all that. I have a picture I remember. They lowered a chute and the strap broke, and we had to get out there with hoses and hose the end of the chute off so they could raise it back up. But it was pretty hard to hose.
It's like mud then.
Yeah.
So you stayed on the Stanley for that entire summer, or how long did that last?
I stayed the entire season from June 24th, and we laid her up in Milwaukee, I think, maybe, and then went home. It might have been Milwaukee, because I remember they had a airline strike, American Airlines or something went on strike, and we had to take buses from Milwaukee through Chicago and home. Well, I was kind of being young and stuff. I went on one bus, my gear went on another, and got to Cleveland. It was such a bad bus station, I kind of had to keep my gear with me and sit on it and stuff. So, and I remember a few times going in there, I would get in at 11:30 at night, and the bus home wouldn't come till about 7:30 in the morning, so I had a couple all-nighters there.
Had you hit any rough weather by this point in your sailing career, or any initial storms?
I went on the Stanley again in 75, and I you can remember that date.
Mm-hmm.
I was on Stanley on November 10th. We were out that afternoon at Lake Superior. We got up behind Isle Royale, and we did quite a bit of rolling. I got two pictures before I ran out of film. One was the boat, real tilted with the waves coming up to the gunwale, and then I have a picture of the inclinometer, I think, at 45 degrees or something like that, yeah. So we did some rolling, but we got up into Sturgeon Bay, or not Sturgeon Bay, Thunder Bay, yeah. Oh, but anyway, so we stayed there for a while, and then when it cleared up, we went down, and everybody that had binoculars, I was one of them, we were on the bow trying to find any sign or wreckage of the Fitzgerald, and we never did. It was still pretty gray and that out, so.
What do you recall of that incident when you were on the ship? Did you guys know about it right away, or as deckhands, or was that kind of?
Yeah, we're probably right after it happened that we knew about it and stuff, so.
What was the thought among the crew about a ship sinking?
I can't remember all that much, but it was a pretty sad time, so.
So was that pretty typical? You would go to anchor in a storm like that, or?
Yeah. Well, when we finally got down to port, we had like a 2-degree list, and we had taconite in there, and I don't know if you remember, they have the walk tunnels and the hatch doors here. It'll go into the cargo holes and onto a little platform and go down a ladder. Well, the ore had shifted so much enough that we had to go down, when they got it dug down, we had to go down on the after hatchway going in there, go down the ladder, walk across the pile, up the ladder to the platform, and shovel about 2 to 3 foot of ore out front of the door on the platform to get it open. So it shifted that much.
Now, why would you stay at anchor and other ships go out in the storm?
I don't know. They're bigger, of course, back then. It's like, okay, weather's done, and then they just go out in it. Of course, they didn't have all that good weather stuff back then either. They had to get on the radio and listen to all the, I guess they wrote down numbers and codes and stuff, and then went from there, so.
Hmm. Okay.
We were out in a few of them that shouldn't have, but some of them were heavy weather skippers, and I kind of like it later on with Interlake that they started being a bit more careful.
So you stayed on the Stanley all of 1975?
Yeah.
Where would that one lay up? That laid up in Superior, didn't it?
I think it did. I know we almost laid up in Monroe, which is a real hole in the wall. Before, back in 75, they were going to have a strike or something, but we were there for about one day and then left.
Okay. So that gets us to the next year, 76.
76 and 77, I was on the Anderson. So So that was solid. I think Two Harbors, Gary, Indiana for two seasons. So I never really got off the boat because I didn't like Gary. And we couldn't really get off up above unless something, you know, we went down for water, you know, pump the ballast, you get the ballast pot up for maybe 2 hours. I was usually on the dock all the time shifting.
So that was a pretty nice ship, isn't it, the Anderson?
It was okay. It was pretty fast. But the deckhands lived aft. No, we stayed. I think we were at our rooms up forward.
So same trip, Duluth to Gary, every time?
Yep, every time just about, so.
So the charm is kind of worn off of sailing at this point?
No, I kept at it. I kept at it, putting in for boats. I went on the, I asked for the olds in 78 and 79 and got that. And that was one of the double A's, which the Fraser, now the Alpina, is the only one left. It had, the clamps on it were like, and they flipped up, but they were like L-shaped, and you had to take a pipe and tighten them. But we did several trips from Toledo taking grain or soybean up to Bay Como and Port Cartier up the Seaway, and I really enjoyed those trips. Those were my favorite trips.
So you went to Thunder Bay?
No, Bay Como and Port Cartier, we had to go up through the well and then all the way up the Seaway.
No, I mean when you loaded, I'm sorry.
Toledo.
Oh, you took grain in Toledo.
Yeah.
And which elevator was that?
I don't know. Being a deckhand, I never really, back with USTL, I never really kept track of where or what or where, so.
Sure. So describe your trip down the well, and that was your first trip up the Seaway?
Yeah, we did several between two seasons there. Yeah, I enjoyed it. And they put the deckhands on 4-hour watches, and then when we went through the locks, we had the 2 hours after and 2 hours before for a watch so we could assist the watchman tying up for the locks. That usually lasted the whole time we were in the well, and so it was an enjoyable trip going up the river and did a lot of painting and scraping and all that, and I actually got numerous pictures going up there. Thankfully, I had some mates and stuff that tolerated my carrying a camera with me all the time, because I'd be painting and I'd have the camera sitting on deck next to me. I'd look up, take a picture, and then go back to painting. So
you go to Bay Como and unload into another ship or into their elevator system there?
We unloaded into their elevator system there, and I remember, I think we hauled like 600 and some thousand bushels. We tied up behind the Salty, and our outboard side was even with the midship, and I believe the top of our pilot house went to the spar deck.
So. You look pretty tiny next to him.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, I've even got pictures. I had a goal. I'm backtracking a little bit, but I had a goal that I wanted to see how many of the I guess there's like 10 locks that I could get in an 8-hour period. I got 8 of them. So I thought that was my accomplishment that I remember for that year. And then, have you ever been up to the Welland?
I have, yes.
Well, then you might be familiar that they dropped this pretty fast.
Right.
Okay, well, you know, halfway down, they got that little exhaust hole. Have you ever been out on deck and heard, well, as soon as we hit that, it just was one big roar. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, much of them. Maybe about a few of them. But anyways, we had to assist the watchmen and stuff with the cables when they pull them up and stuff. Well, had a new watchman on there, and I stayed back in case I had to pull any cable or, you know, out of the way. Well, he was running the winches and watching the cable and all, and we hit where that exhaust hole was, and that started roaring. This guy jumped straight up in the air off the little platform he was on and wrapped his hand around the pole for the landing boom.
Is he afraid he was going to get sucked into it or what?
I don't know what. It just scared the hell, you know, I mean.
You're a small ship. You probably went through there pretty quickly then.
Yeah, fairly quick. I don't remember how, you know, how fast, but I remember standing on top of the pile house and just being able to look over the lock wall. Yeah, I love going through Thousand Islands and stuff. That was beautiful. The castles and Bolt Castle and all that. I think that one of them was up for sale a few years ago. But yeah, it was really nice. And then we would load Seaway ore to bring back up. That was like a heavy silvery flake. We took that to Conneaut.
Where would you load that?
I think Bay Como. And then we would bring a load of that down and unload it in Conneaut.
Is that like sort of a silvery color ore? It's very dense, if I recall.
Yeah. So that was fun because we had to get the cargo holds cleaned out and stuff before we could load grain in Toledo. So that was a long hours.
So how did you unload the grain? Did they have a marine leg to suck it out of the boat?
Yeah, they had the legs and stuff, but unlike Buffalo, where they had to put it down there and then had to get the grain scoopers down there and run them lines all over. This one had actually turnstiles or whatever that they lowered on each side and just pulled it right to the leg and right up. Then they would go down there with one of those bobcats with a big brush on it. So it was pretty quick.
Much more efficient than Buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
What was the tonnage on your ship, on the Olds?
I have no idea. It couldn't have been more than 10,000 or so. I'm not sure.
So that was a pretty small ship.
Yeah.
So you stayed on the Olds for a couple of years, 78, 79. And where were that?
Yeah.
That laid up in where? Duluth or?
I know it laid up in Milwaukee. In fact, maybe it was 78. We come out of Death Door. And, I mean, it was that big, thick, blue ice stuff. And we hit a chunk of ice, and it actually bent in a plate on it. And we spent about 8 days in Milwaukee getting that plate replaced. And a lot of people have tried to go, oh, well, I stayed and worked and rented a car. I think I spent more than I made that week. Got that all fixed. And, of course, back then they didn't have all the laser cutting devices and stuff either, so...
U.S. Steel used to lay up a lot down there in Milwaukee, didn't they? They have like a dockside facility there?
Yeah, I've seen pictures of all of Jones Island is filled with U.S. Steel boats.
Why did they go to Milwaukee?
Probably a good convenient place and a room for them and things. So with so many boats, they probably didn't have that much room. You know, they had to go where they could for... They probably, with all that. Because I know when I started sailing, they had like 36 boats for U.S. Steel, maybe. I'm not sure.
So you didn't want to change to another fleet? You liked U.S. Steel?
Well, I went on the Spear for 80 and 81 and laid that up early because of strike. And I was laid off after 2 years or so. I know a few people kept in contact with them, but and at the meantime, they sent me to cable splicing school, and then I also got my AB ticket at that time. So when things picked up again in the late 80s, I was actually able to get a watchman job with full pay back then.
Tell me about this school. You went to learn the Marlin spike kind of. Not many people know how to they don't even splice cables anymore, do they?
They might want, but yeah, we learned how to splice cable, and then we had a lifeboat. I had to get to lifeboat school and a bunch of different things. So,
when did you go back out to sailing again? This would have been the late 80s?
Yeah, November 87, I went on the Moffie, then laid her up, and I was on her for, I alternated between her and the... I did the Hoyt for a month. I fit her out after all those years at Detour.
Explain that to me.
They had laid her up for quite a few years at Detour, and that's when Barker bought the fleet And we went and fit that out and get it back in service. I was only on there a month because he needed a watchman elsewhere, so.
You went to the Mothi. Why did you change fleets?
I just went to a hiring hall and stuff. They had them then, and I said, my friend Donovan by then was working for Interlake. He got fired from U.S. Steel. So we went working for Interlake, and he said, well, ask for them. And I did, and they wanted to put me to Columbia. I said, no, I want Interlake. And they kept it. So I stayed firm and said, I want Interlake. And that's the best choice, you know, thing that's there, because look what happened to Columbia.
Right. Yeah. You would have been merged with another fleet. Yeah.
And then fired. So.
Well, there is that too.
They might as well just say fired. You know, they really put the screws on them guys. But so anyway, I stayed with Interlake.
So in '87, the Mothi is still running ore, or are they just hauling grain?
They were hauling grain. We did some ore, but pretty much just grain.
So '87, you're pretty much on the Mothi and the Hoyt. Or you weren't really on the Hoyt, you just fitted out and then you sailed the Mothi?
I went on the Beagle, and then I think maybe back on the Mothi or something. Then I sailed, I think like '89, I sailed them, and then I went on the Mesabi Minor, I think, and then to the back to the Mothi for a year, and then after that it was the Minor for about 9 years, and then 9 seasons on the Paul R. I had a year off there. I went through cancer and chemo, so I got that. I was diagnosed with that in the early part of '92 and went back to work the next season. So,
Okay. So when did you actually stop sailing? What year was that?
May 1st, 2013, I retired. I went to fit out the boat, and my feet were all swollen. I went to a doctor, and no climbing ladders or working more than 4 hours. So that threw the fit for duty right out the porthole.
Was that in the PRT?
Yeah. I was getting ready to decide to I wanted to go a couple more years, but with all the changes and stuff, it was getting, you know, new people and the different attitudes and cutthroats, and I hate to say that word, but there's a lot of cutthroats out there trying to maneuver around and this and that to move up the seniority list.
So did you ever sail on their other ships, the K and the Lee A, those? You were on those as well, right?
The K was the only one I never went on. I was on the Lee A in the 2000. We were in Stoneport when the Twin Towers were hit. In fact, I think I was the one I was in watching the news on a break when they come on the news that the Twin Towers had been hit.
Huh.
So kind of surprised the rest of the crew a little bit. So everybody was on their cell phones back. They had them back then, and so that's where I was, Stoneport on the Lee. I sailed there for 1 year, and then went on to Jackson for 2 seasons after that. And that's when they cut the crew there. So they started cutting the crew, you know, when they started eliminating engineers and watchmen and stuff. Yeah, it was great. I was on the Jackson in 2002 and 2003 or in there. Yeah. So then after that, I went on the Minor. On the Minor.
So that was 2003 on the Minor?
Yeah, I think 2003 or 4, somewhere around there, so.
And you were on there for 9 years, huh?
No, wait a minute, I went on the Paul R. I was on the Minor before that.
Okay.
I was on Minor in the 90s, so.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I think I've got the chronology down. Now it's just time to talk sailing stories. What are some of your craziest memories, maybe your hardest day of work out on the lakes, or things that stick out in your mind?
I think some of the hardest day was unloading the ore on the three builders. Because it was, you know, we were going to Duluth or 2R time at the pellet terminal there, and it got pretty dirty. We had a lot of fun there. I took a lot of pictures and things, like I say, of all this, all of this going on. And one mate there, we really didn't like the guy. We were on the Hatfield, and we saw this, still about a 14-foot, like a lund or something, and it all gear floating in the middle of Mackinac Straits. Was the one that went down the Jacob's Ladder, and he sent everything up on the boat, and it was, and so there was all that was left was the empty boat to him, and somebody said, let him go. So
he took all the gear out of someone's boat?
Yeah, the boat, this boat that we found floating in the middle of Mackinac Straits. Yeah, and another time we were on, I was on the Miner, and we were west of Michilicoten Island on Lake Superior, and we spotted this barge out. It was rolling pretty good, and we spotted this barge with a two-story crew shack on it. Out in the middle of nowhere, so we circled up, blew the horn and everything, and I took a few pictures, and they called all that, and the Coast Guard had come out. Well, then I got a real nice letter from the Canadian Coast Guard. Heard I had photographs and asked they could use them in the investigation, so I sent them back, said I would like them back. Well, they had their investigation, and they sent a real nice thank you letter back. I still have them. I just found them when I was going through things and put them in an album. So that was pretty neat. And then, of course, I told that story a few times over the years. Well, I got kind of the rest of the story. I posted that on a ship site, and it said, yeah, I know those. He sent pictures. They were trying to buy them or something. It was still around, but it didn't have the bar, the crew shack on it. I got a little bit of history on that.
It just broke loose from the dock?
Evidently. It was way out in the middle of nowhere. But if there had been anybody on it, they would have been seasick. Big time.
Did you ever get seasick?
Oh, yeah, I did. That's why I like the footer so much. It didn't work that bad. Of course, I've seen one or two of them roll a bit, so the footers.
Yeah. So what was the worst storm you were ever out in? You think that one, the Fitzgerald one, or?
The worst one, we were on the Mothy, and we were on Lake Erie. You know, the weather was so rough that we had to tie up a long point in Canada. Well, we got word that all the waves were going down in Buffalo. Our captain pulls anchor and starts to head in. Well, all of a sudden, man, it's like a tug couldn't even get out of the harbor outside the breakwall because they had to meet us to hook up the tow line and all that to go up the river. So here, we got almost to dock, and we had to turn around. And, man, did we start rolling. I was in the porthole of a aft facing doorway, and the sprocket broke on my film, so I didn't get any pictures, but I had to get them from another guy there, and he was taking pictures of the waves as they were starting to come over. He said one time, like, he saw one coming, and he had time to take a picture and then just grab the porthole and hold it up in place. It was blue water all the way across the back of the forward cabins, and we managed to get back, but oh my God, did we do some rolling. And in fact, we were talking to one of the guys at the grain elevator. They said, I felt bad when I said it. He was up on top of the grain elevator, and he thought, goodbye, Edmund Fitzgerald.
Wow. So you were going to go back out to our long point then?
Yeah.
Huh.
So.
And then who gets... So, wow, that sounds pretty scary. I've heard stories of people rolling ships and...
So I was in a few of them. He's like, you see, I said, yeah, okay, the weather's going down. Let's leave.
So you were loaded. You were just waiting to unload.
Yeah, we had a load of grain. Well, we survived.
Yeah.
Then they ruined the Mothy.
What do you think about that tug barge stuff?
I really don't care for it. I remember the pig squeal there. They, that's what we call it anyway. That, you know, that was supposed to be the grand thing there, to, you know, have barges built where they could switch to tugs back and forth, and that never worked out. Then I saw the tug up the Seaway a little bit, and it was, you know, just it. I saw that thing. I'm not going to ever sail on that thing. You know, that thing would roll over in a bathtub.
What was your favorite Interlake ship?
Oh, I liked the Mozzie, but then, you know, the PRT was okay, but that was some long hours, too, in St. Clair and stuff. I would say the out of all of the old I liked, because the trips we made on that, so.
Some of the ports, did you ever go up the Cuyahoga at all?
Not really. That was, you know, like the Farrell and all them. I was on other boats. We went to Kania, Lorraine, one time in Marblehead and the Jackson. I'm glad we never went back there. Drummond Island for Stone. Of course, when I was on the Hatfield and the Urban, it was a lot of trips out of Calcite. Of course, Two Harbors and Duluth. Marquette. Of course, the hardest working trips I hate was loading ore in Marquette, going down to Lorraine or somewhere, not Lorraine, but I can't remember where he went, and unloading it. And then we loaded coal in Kania. We loaded that coal and took it to the Sioux there, Algoma plant.
Oh, okay.
So we had to have all that, you know, like working a Sioux, and then of course we had to rotate and stuff and unload coal there, and that stuff was so sticky, and they had such a small hopper, and I hate it. We had to go down on chains and cables and stuff, you know, with safety belts and clean the coal out of the corners. And then some of the guys could go like two or three sides of the thing, but after one side, I was beat. I was like 50 years old or something. That was just way too much for me. So that was probably the hardest work I've done. I do remember another little bump we had. I was on the Stanley, and we were coming into Mackinac, and I believe it was the Presque Isle, and they were going into the Mack Lock. And we had steam winches, so they weren't that powerful. We were on the dock, and while we were starting to go in, and we got the bullnose on the upper end, and the suction from the Presque Isle or something, it just pulled our boat right over at the forward bow. It bumped into that bullnose and dented in the cable, and it was right where our paint locker was. And if we hadn't had the paint on the outboard side of the paint locker, it would have been all over the deck. So we didn't lose any, so that was good. So that got us a few days in the shipyard.
What's a bullnose?
Oh, I call it bullnose. It's, you know, when you're coming into the locks there, they got the point at the, you know, they don't have a real long pier there.
Right.
In between the MacArthur and the pole lock. That's where we hit. Oh, it's just where the dock came to a point, or something. I call it a bullnose.
Okay. Well, you didn't have bow thruster on the Hatfield, did you?
No, this was the Stanley. Oh. No, we didn't have a... They did put a bow thruster on a Stanley in 75, and there's a story. J.J. McDonald, he was an alcoholic captain. And, okay, well, we had the bow thruster, and we were down cleaning the tanks at the time, the number one tanks, right under the bow thruster. Well, the captain had guests on there. Well, he wanted to show that these guests they had on board the bow, running of the bow thruster, and he fired that thing up, and you never saw such an angry group of guys come up out of that tunnel. Man, the bosun went up in there. He reamed that captain. He didn't care. Because we were right directly below that thing when it fired it up. And then another time in Lorraine, we had a first and second mate. And the mate, I remember, was Paul Dodds, because I was talking with a guy online and stuff there about him. Well, anyways, then we had a second mate. And the captain and the second mate were drunk probably 80% of the time, and that poor Paul Dodge had to practically run the boat. And it's like one time we come into port, And the captain asked this cadet we had if he would pick him up a bottle and some beer in the ring. And Paul Dodge heard and he said, "Don't give him that bottle until we get out of the break wall on the Lake Erie." Okay, I'm down at the dock reading the ship cable, and I see that the cadet come down with a brown paper bag with a bottle and went up the ladder. And when cabin there was the old man was up there and seen him, so per orders, the cadet kept the bottle on. And said, well, he went down into the engine room and up through the walk tunnel while the captain was, yeah, kind of a waddled back ass looking, oh, where'd he go? Oh, I think he went down in the tunnel. So he went down there, and here we saw the cadet coming down the deck from forward. It must have been two or three rounds.
Chasing each other around the ship?
He didn't want the captain to have that bottle because, we used to have these little electric coolers at the time, and he would sneak into rooms and steal the beer. And we all had beer one time, and one of the bosun got so mad at him that he laid a layer of pop on top of the beer cans, and the captain came in there, and he saw the door open, and the bosun woke up and saw him, he'll sneak him out there, and heard the can pop, and he didn't even look at the can he had, and he took a big gulp of that, and oh, that sure surprised the captain.
Was that pretty common, drinking on the ships back then?
Yeah, we weren't supposed to, but Stanley was one of the big drinking ships. I got drunk a few times. In fact, me and my roommate, Greer Dudley Beard, I'll never forget that. He said he's all half Irish, half Quapaw Sioux, and all alcoholic. But I found this wooden box with a hinge lid, and we painted that up, and we went up to the liquor store in Chicago, stuffed a bunch of half-pint bottles down our cowboy boots and stuff, and brought it back. I have a picture of it somewhere. I have a little mini bar.
So you'd hide the booze in your boots?
Yeah, when we come back through the gates and stuff in Chicago, yeah. We brought pop and picked up some beer, because that's when they had the bumboat that there. They would put our beer in brown paper bags and deliver it to our room. Which leads us, we had two trips left on the Stanley. We got there and everybody went down in a bumboat. Somebody counted, they drank like five cases on the bumboat, and somebody counted about 50 more cases come on board. Six of them went into the chief's room, and everybody was drunk the entire layup. And actually, that beer there was gone by the end of the trip.
So, where was the bumboat?
In Duluth. Caner.
Oh.
Caner's bumboat. Another time, we had a wheelsman that liked his blast. He ran out of beer one time, and we got to Lorraine. He lowered the two-wheel cart down and went uptown, and somebody wrote on a chalkboard, "Doc falls off wagon, goes uptown, Lorraine panics." This was the stuff we did.
What was this guy's name again?
Doc Thoreau. He's a wheelsman.
How about card games? Were you much of a card shark, John?
Card victim. I lost my ass. Of course, then we played cribbage. There was three of us that played cribbage all the time. We used to set a card table out on deck and play, and I lost my ass in that.
So what do you think back when you think back on your sailing career? What... Is it a good living?
Then I'm done with it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't miss a lot of the stuff. And like I say, when the crews got cut, attitudes changed. And I was glad I got off on a medical when I did. So.
What were your thoughts when you got off the... That was on the PRT you retired from then.
Yeah, happy.
Did they give you a retirement party, anything, or...
A little one there, a cake, and I got they got me a clock, so, and a nice little case.
Well, John, we could probably talk for hours, I would bet.
Yeah.
Let me stop you here, unless you've got any other stories, and I'll kind of compile this, and then maybe we can chat again another day.
This concludes this Inland Mariners audio interview. Thank you for listening. This audio program has been presented by the Inland Mariners, Cypress Pictures LLC, and Patrick Lipinski. To hear more, go to inlandmariners.com.